Welcome to Friday. Welcome to KOW's Week in Review. This is the hour we spend together figuring out what happened this week, what it means, what's important about it. And this hour we have the host of the Savage Love podcast, editorial director at The Stranger, Dan Savage. Good to see you again.
Good to see you too.
Joni Balter hosts Civic Cocktail on Seattle Channel. Welcome back, Joni.
Hello.
Chris Vance, former chair of Washington State's Republican Party, recent candidate for U.S. Senate. Good to see you too.
Always good to be here.
Let's talk what happened this week. Actually, this is also about what's about to happen on Monday. The Electoral College casts its votes for president. Two of Washington State's electors say they're not going to cast votes for Hillary Clinton, even though that's who Washington State voters chose. One of those electors, 19-year-old Levi Guerra of the Moses Lake area, told KUOW that she is living up to her obligation.
When I was elected as an elector, and I stood up and I spoke to my constituents, there was a lot of divide in the Democratic Party. There was a divide between the Clinton supporters and there was a divide between the Sanders supporters. But during that time, the one thing that they were able to come together and unify behind was not Trump. And so when I stood up and made my promise to my constituents, I made the promise that I would do everything in my power to ensure that he was not placed into office. And for me, by following through with this vote, I am keeping with the promise that I made to my constituents. And to me, that is one of the most important things that I could possibly do.
What are our state electors obligated to do? What do you think?
Well, to be clear, if I may, she's not saying she's not voting for Hillary. She doesn't support Hillary. She offered to vote for some compromise Republican,
yes,
or a Kasich or a Romney.
She hasn't decided, but that's the idea. And the idea is, obviously, costing Hillary Clinton, how does that block Donald Trump? Well, she and another state elector are trying to inspire Republican electors, trying to let them know, hey, a revolt is happening and you can do this. You can vote for anybody you want.
I'd rather she was trying to get all the electors to vote for the person who won the popular vote by a nearly 3 million vote margin.
That would be Hillary Clinton. There's that.
As much as I would like to see John Kasich or another Republican in the White House other than Donald Trump, what concerns me here more than anything else right now at this moment in world history is this declining support for democracy itself and fraying legitimacy. And, you know, I understand that constitutionally the Electoral College can choose whoever they want, but the American people expect that after they vote and the American people understand how the Electoral College works and has worked. They expect that Donald Trump is going to be sworn in on January 20th. If he's not, I think you'd see another enormous cohort of Americans lose faith in the system, believe the whole thing is rigged. And that, to me, is the most dangerous thing that could happen right now.
Well, my thought on this is that, you know, it doesn't matter what I want, and it doesn't matter if I don't like the person who was elected by the electors. The gist of it is, and this is sort of what you're saying, Chris, is you cannot change the rules in the middle of the game. That's the problem with this scenario.
But the rule is that there's an electoral college that gets to do what it wants.
Right. Yeah. And the most dangerous thing that could happen is Donald Trump getting sworn in as president on January 20th. That is the most dangerous thing. The American people need a tutorial in the function and purpose of the Electoral College. And the only way they're going to get that is if the Electoral College fulfills its purpose, which was laid out really two big reasons: to empower and slave states and give them more representation than they deserved, and also to prevent a demagogue or someone with a foreign entanglement from seizing the White House by assembling a mob, which is what Trump did. So the Electoral College is there to prevent a Trump. So if it's there to do that, it should do that.
You know, I'm all for all the investigations, hearings, and other things that should definitely come out and happen and roll out in the months ahead, because that's also our system.
You mean investigations into Russian hacking?
Into Russian hacking, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So to me, but it still feels funny to say that, you know, the election had one date, November 8th, and then when the electors come in, they went, oh my gosh, we don't like him anymore, and we never did, and now we'll come up with somebody totally different.
Well, then let's get rid of the Electoral
College. Yeah, I want to be clear.
The popular vote.
That is the Electoral College, at least that they call themselves Hamilton electors, because
yes,
Alexander Hamilton said that's going to be a check on the dumb popular will, in his opinion.
A check on the demagogue winning the popular vote.
Right.
Alexander Hamilton's concern. And what we have here is a demagogue who lost the
didn't even win the popular vote. So I just want to make sure.
As I said when I was here last time, yeah, I would vote to get rid of the Electoral College tomorrow.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But you're saying as long as we.
Yeah. Imagine in the real world what you're actually saying is you want a bunch of Democrat politicians and Never Trump Republicans to band together to deny Donald Trump the White House. That really would cause a massive uprising out there.
And you know what?
And again, we'd end up with...
Don't you end up then saying, okay, the Electoral College, this is its entire purpose. It's not going to do what it's intended to do because we're scared because a certain group of people seem so threatening.
If you wanted it to be popular vote, that's one thing. Because but once you have this rule, you can't change the rules in the middle. It just seems so bizarre that you would do that.
Which rule is going to happen anyway, by the way.
As Joni said, it would be de facto, not de jure, not by law, but in the real world. You know, there's this concept under the law that you have certain rights, but if you don't exercise them, you eventually lose them. You know, if I don't enforce my property line between my neighbor for 30 years and all of a sudden I do, that doesn't hold up in court. We cannot all of a sudden say we want Alexander Hamilton's Electoral College when the American people have never expected that that's how the system would actually work.
This is what the Electoral College is there for, that it has never had to step in and play its constitutional role doesn't mean it doesn't have that constitutional role. And I have to say, if the shoes were on the other feet, if the Republican candidate had won by a 3 million vote margin, if a foreign power to interfere to help Hillary Clinton and harm the Republican candidate, Republicans would be doing everything in their power to claw back the White House. They would be calling for the Electoral College to...
And in that case, you'd be okay with that because that's the Electoral College's role?
If the Democrat was a demagogue and a racist and an anti-Semite surrounding themselves with racists and anti-Semites and corrupt plutocrats, yeah, maybe I might support it. But in that bizarro universe, the Republican would be the Democrat.
So I'll agree with that part of it, Dan Savage. And the reason is because, as you have observed, and many people watching history, the Republicans are better at fighting, at invoking any rule they can think of to fight. And the Democrats aren't very good at this. There's a fascinating piece in the New York Times, I think it was yesterday, talking about this. But that, you know, this still doesn't change my position on this.
I want to make it clear, I'm not here as a Republican on this. I mean, because I think hopefully by now the world knows I didn't support Donald Trump. I don't support Donald Trump. I'd love to see Governor Kasich as president. But as an American, I think it would do more harm than good to our democracy.
Just to be clear on that, because some people would take to the streets and shoot people? What are we talking about?
I don't think just some people. I think there would be a huge problem. And beyond, even if there wasn't any physical violence, it just leads to this, I think, very destructive narrative that's out there from both the far right and the far left that everything's rigged. Everything is rigged and controlled by this invisible hand of some evil insiders. And that why participate in a democracy if you believe it's rigged?
But this isn't the response to that is this isn't rigging. This is what this was designed to do. This is what the Electoral College is freaking.
But Chris is saying in the real world, Americans won't understand.
And in the real world, you'd have to respond to that bedwetting with reason and logic, and you have the Constitution.
It'd be a lot more than bedwetting.
And the Federalist Papers on your side. And I'm sorry, I think whatever the reaction might be to the Electoral College fulfilling its constitutional role and not putting this demagogue in the White House, that would be burn hot, burn fast. It would be shocking, and there would be riots. There'd be people in the streets. That, I don't think, can compare to the damage that 4 years of a Trump administration is going to do. The damage that might be done on that day or that month is going to be small and inconsequential compared to the damage Donald Trump is going to do over the next 4 years.
Okay, I think we've covered that issue for now. The Electoral College is going to cast its votes on Monday.
And it's not going to change the results.
And I don't think anyone thinks that it's going to change the
election. But you know what?
It's going to
help Donald Trump. I think there's going to be more Hamilton electors than anybody expects. I think that he's not going to get the 307 or whatever his total was. And that all by itself is going to be a good thing because it's going to further delegitimize him in his own eyes and the eyes of the American public.
Which is in part what's going on here. This is in some ways an effort to delegitimize
an illegitimate president.
Okay, so that would be a kind of...
By delegitimizing him, you delegitimize our democracy and our system.
But Chris, this would be if Trump takes office but with significantly less than 307 electoral votes, maybe that's a civics lesson that gets us along the road toward educating the American people on how the Electoral College actually is supposed to work all along.
If it leads to a constitutional amendment to abolish the Electoral College, good. I think that'd be great for our democracy.
Okay.
But I'm afraid it would be something different.
I do too.
You brought up legitimizing the president-elect. So let's talk about that. This week, Washington State joined in the trooping to Trump Tower. Former Microsoft CEO Bill Gates, current Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella, Even Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos, who once joked about sending Trump to space on a rocket, met with Trump. So did Washington Congresswoman Kathy McMorris Rodgers, who was being considered for Interior Secretary. Here's how the Wall Street Journal describes what happened, according to multiple people. She walks into the room. Donald Trump is there. Donald Trump Jr. is there. Trump Sr. cites a long list of things the Congresswoman had criticized him for, asks her to address them. She doesn't take back her criticism of Trump's woman-groping remarks caught on tape, but she says, hey, I never stopped endorsing you for president. They discuss public lands a little bit. Trump Sr. is there for 15 minutes total. Then he leaves the room. His son stays in the room with McMorris Rodgers for another 15 minutes. Next thing you know, she's no longer up for Interior Secretary. The job goes to a one-term Congress member from Montana, and the Wall Street Journal quotes insiders saying Trump Jr. heavily influenced his father's decision.
And this would be Trump Jr., who's going to be running his businesses in a sort of blind trust, who's actually hiring his cabinet secretaries also.
So it's never a good sign if you're in a meeting with somebody and you're about to get a job if they get up and leave the room. That's executive speak for I'm not hiring you. That's what that actually means. You know, I had a feeling about Kathy McMorris Rodgers the entire time. You know, she is not – Donald Trump likes bright, shiny objects. Kathy McMorris Rodgers is just not – I mean, she's kind of – I get that she's not from Schenectady or something like that. She does have public lands in her district. But she's kind of too church lady for him, if you think about it. She's not the type that would fit in his administration. He's not big on hiring women, in case you didn't notice, for his cabinet. And so it would have to be one that is more like him. And that doesn't even get you to the whole hunting thing between Don Jr. and Representative Zinke.
Apparently, yes. There's this split where this the Interior Secretary nominee, as it turned out, this Montana Congress member, Ryan Zinke, is into hunting as Donald Trump Jr. is, and supposedly in the construction of the Wall Street Journal, Trump's son has helped is helping sway Donald Trump to the idea that we should preserve wilderness areas for hunting and fishing and not sell off federal lands to states as Kathy McMorris Rodgers, the Washington State Congress member, is in favor of doing.
And as many rural conservatives would like to see, whether it's a good idea or not.
As in it's not.
Well, it depends on the piece of land, in my view. But it just is another example of how ad hoc and disorganized this administration seems to be, and that Donald Trump has a long memory and keeps score, which is scary. I think we saw that when he decided to tweet about Air Force One to punish Boeing for opposing him on trade. He takes everything personally, which is frightening.
Well, and also in that regard, you know, one of his standards for Mitt Romney for Secretary of State was you come in and in the first 5 minutes, you apologize, you grovel. And she only half groveled, so that's the end of her. He got up and left.
Do you have a problem, anyone, with all this parade of people meeting with Trump? Bill Gates got guff for not only meeting with Trump at Trump Tower, but comparing him to JFK, saying, in the same way President Kennedy, this is a Bill Gates quote, in the same way President Kennedy talked about the space missions and got the country behind that, I think whether it's education or stopping epidemics, energy, that can be a very upbeat message that his administration is going to organize things, get rid of regulatory barriers, and have American leadership through innovation.
I looked at the picture of that meeting with all the tech executives, and the only thing it brought to mind were business executives and industrialists meeting with Hitler after Hitler won the election. I hate to be to go Godwin on everyone, but that's what that brought to mind. Like, here's somebody we can work with. Let's pick the corn out of this turd and figure out what the bright side is and what's edible here. And it just is so depressing and distressing.
Okay, those sentences together.
Is that an emotional reaction?
No,
or are
right.
you saying?
He's right. And he's right. And people need to understand something. It's really simple. Human beings are motivated by self-interest.
Exactly.
And there's a whole lot of people out there that wish Donald Trump had not won the election, but he did. And now Microsoft wants something from the federal government, and or companies want to prevent things from happening because of the federal government. Republican politicians want jobs.
And do you fault them for meeting with Donald Trump?
I do fault them, but
They should have walked into that room and put down on the table the petition that was circulated and signed by many of their employees saying they would not work on any sort of tech fix to create a list of Americans who are Muslim or a list of Americans who are undocumented immigrants to aid the Trump administration in their fascist goals. That's what they should have done at the start of that meeting.
But this guy's going to get in just so much trouble, Donald Trump, and he is going to need a relationship with some of these smart tech leaders.
But do you fault these any of these leaders?
No, I don't.
You can put in Al Gore, a whole bunch of people, Kanye West.
Is absurd, but let's take Jeff Bezos for a second.
Okay, Jeff Bezos.
He hits them daily from his editorial page at the Washington Post.
Right.
He's not holding back.
Right.
He has much to say, and he will continue to say that. But the fact that he wants to go in and establish some working relationship, of course I don't blame him. Of course he should go.
An eternal debate about what is corporate responsibility. You know, and CEOs will tell you their responsibility is their shareholders to maximize profits, not to be ideological. But even from that perspective, if I were Microsoft, I would say to the president-elect, if you want to have a relationship with us, you need to first assure us that you're not going to start a trade war, particularly with China, because trade is critical to our company. Boeing, same thing. So even everybody who wants to have a relationship with Trump, my advice would be, first of all, get him on the record that he's not going to destroy you. Even if you don't want to move, even if you don't want to have your actions dictated by ideals, even in terms of self-interest, just kowtowing to him before he takes these terrible policy options off the table is not a very good idea.
I don't think they were kowtowing. I think they were just saying the door's open, we get to talk.
No. There's a difference between wanting to have a working relationship, meeting with somebody, seeing if there's any common ground, and aggressive analingus, which is what comparing Donald Trump to JFK is.
Okay.
Well, should we pause? That's always a good place to just take a breath, don't you think? Let's talk more in a moment about a little more about the election, because we've got Russia figuring in here, Hillary Clinton weighing in, and then there's the question of what news is even real in the first place and what Facebook can do about it. That's coming up on the Week in Review. KUOW's Week in Review with Chris Vance, former chair of Washington State's Republican Party. I have to ask you this every time I see you. Still a Republican?
Yes.
Still so far a Republican?
I refuse to let Donald Trump or anybody else drive me out of my party.
That's how I always describe myself, as a Catholic, for kind of the same reason.
Okay, still a Catholic. Dan Savage, Savage Love Podcast, editorial director at The Stranger. And from Seattle Channel, the host of Civic Cocktail, Joni Balter.
I'm still me.
Are you still you?
I'm still me.
Okay. Still Civic?
Very.
Okay, still drinking cocktails?
All day.
All right.
Especially these days.
We're a couple of cocktails in on the Week in Review. Moving on, right after Hillary Clinton lost the presidential election, she blamed the head of the FBI for talking about reopening the email investigation against her in the days leading up to the election. Last night, Clinton pointed another finger, the, quote, attack against our country by Russian President Vladimir Putin. She said Putin directed the hacking of Democratic Party emails because he has a, quote, personal beef with her, because she said Russia's 2011 parliamentary elections were rigged. She also said, quote, the press is finally catching up to the facts, which we desperately tried to present to them during the last months of the campaign. Chris Vance, you just ran for U.S. Senator. What would you do about Russia if you were in the Senate?
Well, first of all, not ever consider lifting the sanctions against them. When they invaded the Ukraine, the United States and NATO inflicted really crippling sanctions against them. It's really hurting the Russian economy, which is in bad shape.
Keep up the sanctions.
Yeah, two things really hurt Russia: our fracking and our sanctions have brought down the price of oil. So absolutely not lift the sanctions. Basically, keep pursuing the policies we've been pursuing. Beef up NATO's military presence in Eastern Europe to make it clear that they can't move against the Baltics. Maintain the sanctions, and not waver on those things.
Trump will do which of those?
Well,
things?
We'll find out. But his new Secretary of State has advocated for lifting those sanctions because they hurt his company, Exxon.
ExxonMobil.
And that is horrifying to me.
Chris, my whole life, Republicans have demonized Russia. Today, more than a third of Republican voters say they approve of Vladimir Putin. What does that say about your party? You're still a Republican, you just told me.
That's also horrifying to me. There's an old saying, Democrats fall in love, Republicans fall in line. And Republicans really want to follow the leader. And Donald Trump is not a fool in every respect. And when he talked about how he could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and not lose any votes, he was on to something. There is a unfortunate number of Republicans who will pretty much support whatever Donald Trump says, even supporting Vladimir Putin.
So I have this feeling, and I certainly don't know if I'm right about this, but I have this feeling that Donald Trump knew enough about the hacking during the election that he kept saying it's rigged to sort of set the other folks up to say it wasn't rigged so they couldn't complain later. Everybody with me on that?
Got it.
That is what it feels like to me, because Hillary says, oh, you know, it was so hard to get her message out. She tried a little. She didn't try that much. She was playing defense on a couple things the whole time that weren't
connected. Playing defense against the media, to a great extent.
Absolutely. I 100% agree with that. I think the false equivalency of her emails equals some of the things Donald Trump thinks and says was just plain madness. I don't understand it.
Let's talk about a certain kind of media, social media, because another phenomenon this election was the fake news showing up on social media and getting passed around. Made up stories about Trump and Clinton. The anti-Clinton stories got many, many more views. Clinton runs a child abuse ring out of a pizza joint. The Pope endorses Trump, etc. Now Facebook is making changes to deal with that. You'll be able to flag a post as fake news. Facebook will ask you, do you want to tell the person who sent you this that it's fake? Do you want this friend ever to speak to you again? You have that. That's optional. You can send ping that back to the sender. If enough people say an article is fake, Facebook will send it to a group of fact checkers, including the Associated Press, PolitiFact, FactCheck.org, Snopes, and ABC News, which sound pretty lamestream media to me. These are groups that think, you know, that there are facts. And the disputed articles will appear lower down in your news feed, and if you try to share an article, you get a pop-up reminding you the accuracy of the piece is in question. All of this is stuff Facebook has resisted because it doesn't want to be seen as choosing what's true. Is anyone concerned about Facebook objectivity here?
Well, I think they've set up a system that has the potential to work. I don't know if it will actually work, but I know that some newspapers did this with their comments. They had people rank comments, and pretty soon all you saw were the better comments, not the really gross ones.
The popular comments.
The more popular. Now, it is possible that this could be abused. You can see people saying, well, you know, I challenge that.
But it's challenged, instead of just being voted up or down on those comment systems, it's challenged and sent to fact checkers. And facts and reality, as Stephen Colbert said, have a liberal bias. So I'm confident that even if there are swarms of right-wingers online challenging fact-based reporting, they won't be able to disable it.
You know, I think it has the potential to work. I really do.
I think this is great.
Because it would go further down. That's
you know, right now we're on the public airways right now. And traditional media has always been regulated by the fact that they are using public resources, and newspapers have these ethics they follow. There's like no ethics on the internet. And you know, people who don't think Facebook is powerful and important are not living in the real world. A huge number of Americans today get their news and their political news from Facebook.
By design, Facebook set itself up to play this role and wanted it.
That's fine, but
now they can't absolve themselves of responsibility for how it's curated.
So now Facebook needs to do things like this.
Yes.
You know, they should, if they start limiting my opinions, what I post on Facebook, I won't like that. But when people are out
there, we'll fact check the heck out of you and see what happens.
Please do. but when people are out there posting these malicious fake news stories, it's really damaging, and Facebook has a responsibility to deal with it.
And last week in Washington, D.C., it almost got a bunch of people killed because somebody who believed this Hillary Clinton running a pedophile ring, child sex slave ring out of a pizza restaurant's basement in D.C., a pizza restaurant that has no basement, that guy walked in with a gun and began to shoot the place up because he was there to rescue those kids who were being raped by Hillary Clinton and her friends.
So people like that deservedly get a lot of attention. But do you think we're exaggerating the number of people who want to read fake news? Or do you think there's going to be a backlash? Like there's just going to be a conservative Facebook or a hyperpartisan Facebook or a fake news is more fun to read Facebook.
One of the things we know now about these fake news stories is many of them were generated in Ukraine and in Russia. To Macedonia to monkey wrench our election. So these fake news stories aren't just people floating their preferred narrative or spinning something out that they wish was true. Americans, these are foreign powers trying to drive us all.
And
well, something
there
really
might,
interesting.
There might be some other sites pop up, and the internet is always changing. But right now, at this today, Facebook is the Goliath of the internet. So at least let's make sure they are acting in a responsible fashion.
Well, they started by saying that, no, that you know, Facebook had nothing to do with it. And now they've come around, what is it, maybe just 5 or 6 weeks later, and they actually have a proposal to do something. One ray of hope for a lot of folks is if you look at the circulation of the Washington Post, the New York Times, right after the election. It soared. It went up 200,000. I don't know who these folks are. I'm dying to see an age breakdown and a sort of who these people are.
Did they vote?
It would have been nice if all these people had been reading the newspaper before the election. It would have been nice if Facebook took these steps before the election.
I agree with that. And did they know, speaking of certain age groups of voters, that at the end they count up all the votes and then somebody wins? That's how it works.
Okay, finally, what about articles that say NORAD is tracking Santa's sleigh around the Earth?
That's true.
Okay. So that,
I've seen it.
That survives. Okay, that's fact checker Chris Vance, Dan Savage here, and Joni Balter. I'm Bill Radke, back with the Week in Review momentarily. Welcome back to KUOW's Week in Review with Dan Savage, Joni Balter, Chris Vance. Seattle's run by lefties, and we like it that way. City Council member Tim Burgess is a Democrat, a relatively liberal Democrat, but on this council he counts as a moderate, or some call him a conservative. Some call him the only adult in the room. This week, Burgess said he won't run for re-election. Joni, why are you bummed out by this news?
Well, I think it's a shame because Tim Burgess was probably the most experienced member of the Seattle City Council. He was the most centrist. You need some of that on this council, especially after district elections. It's gone pretty lefty. The experience he brought, let's talk about that. He's a former cop. He knew his police issues very, very well. He knew the ethics rules. He had been on the Ethics and Elections Committee. He was a hard worker. I mean, he still is. And he would take an issue and study it until he could come up with a solution. He wasn't afraid to be the one in an 8-to-1 vote, which recently happened on the proposal for new rules for homeless camp sweeps. You know, we need that voice. I think we do. I think it's a shame not to have it.
Dan, why are you happy about Burgess not running for re-election?
Because I like the leftward drift of the city council under the reign of terror of Shama Sawant.
What about checks and balances?
We have checks and balances. We still have Bruce Harrell. We still have Sally Bagshaw. There's still relatively mainstream conservative-leaning corporatist Dems on the city council.
Conservative, that's hysterical.
Well, everything's relative, right?
Or in my case, relatives.
I do want to say, though, that you know, you're praising Burgess for being on the one side of some 8-to-1 votes. And whenever Shama Sawant is on the one side of an 8-to-1 vote, people fault her and point to it as evidence that she can't work with.
Yeah, doesn't that make Burgess an extremist?
Yeah, yeah.
If he's outvoted 8-to-1?
He does actually know how to count to 5 votes, which is another matter.
Chris, you're not on the city council.
Are you saying Shama Sawant can't count to 5?
She has been able to lately.
Hmm. I live in Auburn.
Yeah.
Okay. So I was born in Seattle. I've worked in Seattle my whole life. I love Seattle. I've lived in the King County suburbs my whole life. I get it. But I live in Auburn. You know, I'm reticent to talk about the people that the city of Seattle chooses to elect. The people of Seattle have very strong views, and they've elected a city council that reflects those views. But I will say this. As Seattle moves farther and farther left, this is where the Democrats get most of their votes. It's where most of their legislators come from. If Shama Sawant and Pramila Jayapal are able to move the Democrats farther and farther to the left, it's really going to make it harder for the Democrats to continue to hold on to legislative seats outside the city of Seattle. I'm really interested to see what kind of pressure is eventually put on, as Dan said, the corporatist pro-free trade Democrats like Patty Murray and Maria Cantwell as the city of Seattle moves farther and farther to the left.
I just want to interject that the people in Auburn making the minimum wage have Seattle and this lefty out-of-control city council to thank for the raise they're going to get this year when their minimum wage goes up. Because that initiative, that statewide initiative to raise the minimum wage, wouldn't have been floated and wouldn't have passed without what Seattle did raising the minimum wage and without votes in Seattle and King County overwhelmingly supporting raising the minimum wage statewide.
I'm not criticizing Seattle.
You just criticized Seattle for three minutes.
Well, hang on a second. I actually think the Seattle City Council vote, which included all the people we've just been talking about, in favor of the $15 minimum wage was a really good move because the city was in just the right position.
And so you must have then sent a thank you note to Shama Sawant, who made
her
issue.
You know, I'm using the slow mail now.
It hasn't arrived yet.
My point is, as Seattle moves to the left, they'll pull the entire Democratic Party farther to the left, which is going to make it harder for Democrats in the rest of the state.
And Hillary Clinton moved to the left because Bernie Sanders forced her to move to the left, and Hillary Clinton won 3 million more votes than Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton won more votes than any white man who has ever run for president ever by moving to the left.
I certainly appreciate that sentence.
As a moderate Republican, I'm just would again. Great. If the Democrats want to become the Bernie Sanders party, it's going to make life a lot easier for Republicans in the suburbs and in rural areas.
Let's talk about a few statewide Republicans. There's a Republican proposal in the legislature to allow you to bring guns into sports stadiums. Chris, is this a solid Republican idea or fringy nonsense that the liberal media bring up to annoy you?
The latter.
Okay.
I don't think there's any chance that's possibly going to pass. Even Republicans, as I do, who support the Second Amendment and the right to own guns, the right is not absolute, and I'm not sure anybody believes that bringing guns into CenturyLink Field during a Seahawks game when there's a lot of drunken anger going on is a very good idea.
This is easily one of the silliest ideas to come out of Matt Shea, but I must say he's never too far from a whole bunch of other silly ideas. He had done the separate the state, the bathroom issue. He loves these kind of things. I think this is just the season, the month where you throw all these your weirdest ideas into the barrel and see what happens there. This is a terrible idea.
But let's not
and it won't happen. The NFL won't allow it.
But let's not pretend that this terrible idea hasn't gotten off the ground in other states where Republicans are dominant, like Texas, where you can now carry guns into churches and schools and onto playgrounds and into preschools. They have an open carry law that allows you to carry guns. Just
college
about
campuses.
You can carry a gun into a colonoscopy in Texas, and so let's
Which
not pretend
actually
that this is so outside the realm of the plausible or the reasonable that it couldn't possibly happen because it's already happened elsewhere.
I just don't think it'll be approved in our legislature. I think you know
if you added
up all the members of the legislature and said who's the most right, you'd end up with Matt Shea
right there,
and he'd be upset if you didn't give.
But
it
if we were a Republican dominated state, it could happen here. So
absolutely.
Thank God we're not.
If we ever are again a Republican dominated state, it's going to be that the tradition in Washington State Republicans is Dan Evans and Slade Gorton and a moderate sort of more progressive type of Republicanism. You're never going to see Texas type Republicans elected to majorities in Washington State. It has never happened, never will happen.
But you did tell us that Republicans fall in line. So is there something at the top that is going to move the magnetic filings of Washington State Republicans to line up a different way?
You know, that's what's really fascinating. I think if John Kasich had been the Republican nominee, a lot of these Republicans are just as fervently in support of Donald Trump would be supporting John Kasich.
And John Kasich is a radical who just signed a ridiculous
Absolutely.
Anti-abortion law.
I thought he vetoed
that's
gonna be,
that. No, he vetoed the 6-week ban and signed the 20-week ban.
But my point is they want to follow the leader, whoever that is, whatever they're saying. That's what's interesting.
Yeah, but Matt Shea isn't a leader. Let's be clear. He's not.
Can I ask a question of Chris Vance? Are we allowed cross-table question? Just curious if you fell in line behind Ellen Craswell and voted for her when she was the Republican nominee in this state.
Actually, I didn't vote for her. It was 1996. I didn't vote for her.
Did you vote for Gary Locke or did you just spoil your ballot?
I did the same thing I did in this last election. I didn't cast a vote in that race.
So you voted for Ellen Craswell, by the way.
I did not. Well, that's your interpretation.
Chris Vance, you're a big Sounders fan. But you don't want guns on the pitch.
No, I don't want
guns. When it's nil-nil and we just scored an own goal.
No, I still don't want guns. That's exactly why you don't want guns in that situation.
Because you score an own goal and people are
a little noisy.
A European word for upset. I can't think of right now.
Well, and again, seriously, if anybody's ever been to a Seahawks game, there is a lot of drunken anger in that.
You're not even allowed to take certain bags into CenturyLink Field. They want the clear plastic bags. Yeah. There's no way this privately run on public land is going to allow this.
But we all sit here pretending like this is just crazy, and I could start Googling around and find a lot of examples of people arguing, Republicans and conservatives and Second Amendment fans arguing that the stadium is exactly where you need the gun.
There's a consistency there.
A gathering of a large group of people. It's a soft target for terrorists. What we need there are armed patriots who can take out that terrorist if they show up and start shooting up Safeco Field or wherever it is the Mariners play. I can't remember. I'm gay. And so we keep talking about this as if it's ridiculous on its face when there are Republicans making pro-carry guns into arguments, stadiums, churches, schools.
Let me just also add,
and successfully
I agree
passing
with you
legislation
on this, Dan,
in states allowing.
I agree with you on this, but also such a policy would fly in the face of the voters here because what have the voters done around here? Every time you serve them up reasonable gun control, they vote, 71% for extreme risk protection orders, 60% 2 years ago for background checks. This is not in sync with the state of Washington. Matt Shea needs his own state after all.
I guess I do need to step up a little bit for the Second Amendment here. Look, the Washington State Constitution goes even farther than the federal Constitution and says that every individual has a right to own a gun in defense of self or the community.
Not just the militia, well-regulated militia.
All that militia language is not in the Washington State Constitution, which more people need to read. And we are an open carry state. You have a right to bring your gun most places. But it's not absolute. And when you know, as a former lawmaker, when you're writing law, it's about the specifics. And the principle that people need to carry a gun to protect themselves or protect the community, I actually agree with. But not in sports stadiums, not in bars.
Exactly.
By the way, we skipped right over the Seattle Sounders being the MLS Cup champions, like that was no big deal.
That was fantastic. I was there in 1974 when they played at Memorial Stadium. A lot of people might forget. We made it to the finals two other times, lost heartbreaking close matches. For them finally to break through and win the championship is just fantastic.
And was
tell it to a Cubs fan.
Was I the only one who thought those were Sounder colors that the Seahawks wore last night when they clinched their own title?
By the way,
did they clinch a title last night?
Yeah, they
didn't win the Super Bowl, but they, because the Seahawks won, they are now the champions of their division, so they're into the playoffs.
Oh.
Will be. Although Richard Sherman was really, really upset because I think he had a flashback from the Super Bowl loss where Seattle threw the ball near the end zone and got burned. And so the Seahawks offensive coordinator or head coach, the person who called the play, said, it's first and goal. We're on the one. We're going to throw the ball. And Richard Sherman exploded at his head coach, Pete Carroll, as if it's up to him. And then he was asked by a reporter, like, wasn't that out of line of you? And he says, absolutely not. We battle all through the game, and you honor our sacrifice. He was speaking in military language, like, you know, which is kind of how the NFL sells itself, except if this were
NFL has a lot of casualties, so I don't think him speaking in that kind of language is off base.
Right. But if this were an actual military situation, Richard Sherman, do you think you'd get to scream at your commanding officer?
Yeah, so we're going into sports radio here, which is fine. It was great because, I mean, I coached baseball and soccer for years. My kids all played sports. I played high school sports. One of the first things you're taught as an athlete is you do your job and you let the coaches do their job. And Richard Sherman is maybe the best cornerback in the league, but he needs to learn to stay in his own lane, do his job. If he was a high school player, he'd have been benched. You know, I mean, at some point, Pete Carroll's got to tell Richard Sherman, you're not above the game, dude.
He maybe mentioned that after the game, you know, maybe just mentioned it. And Richard Sherman is not known for publicly taking back anything he has earlier
said. I like a lot of things about Richard Sherman.
I got to say, he's really hot.
There you go.
Somebody's got to throw that.
That's
on
just
the
one. He's a very attractive man.
Mm-hmm.
All right, this is Hawk Talk.
Smart guy.
This is KW's Week in Review.
Gay Sports Radio now.
All right, back at the news of the week in just a moment with Joni Balter, Dan Savage, and Chris Vance. KUOW is the Week in Review. I'm Bill Radke, and we've got Chris Vance and Joni Balter and Dan Savage here covering the news of the week. This week, Washington's Governor Jay Inslee released his budget. He wants $300 million to fix our mental health system. Is he going to get that, Joni? Don't we have a big budget hole because of what we've got to do for education?
Well, I was interested in sort of how this was played, like, you know, this and the spending on K-12 education was somehow, according to Bill Bryant, who ran for governor, the December surprise. Actually, not the December surprise. During the debates, Jay Inslee kept talking about how he'd have some announcements in December, which I thought was lame. I thought he should have said it before the election. But nonetheless, he did say he would be telling us about how he would spend on mental health and K-12 education in December, which was convenient for a candidate because he didn't have to mention the big T word.
Exactly.
So, yes, but
taxes, to state the obvious.
But it was obvious that it would. How do you think you get all this new spending for K-12, all the needs that are required under the McCleary decision? You don't get there by just, you know, hoping the revenue forecast is that much higher. It's not going to be that much higher.
Is he going to get all those new taxes?
No,
very unlikely.
No, he's not. So there's a lot to this. I've spent the last 8 years working for Superintendent Public Instruction Randy Dorn, working on this McCleary issue. We need about $4 billion more per year.
And how are we going to get there without taxes,
and,
Chris?
No, Joni, I'm not arguing with you. It's Jay Inslee who ran two campaigns basically promising he wouldn't raise taxes and then after the election saying he would. So the governor stepped up and offered the most serious
George H.W. Bush there.
The most serious McCleary plan we've seen so far, and I give him credit for that. But there's two big buts here. Number one, he did not propose new legislation to prevent school districts from using levies for basic education. You'll never solve McCleary until you do that, because school districts will keep using their levy dollars for extra teachers, which is blatantly unconstitutional. And second, these taxes are not going to pass the Republican Senate. They're not. So when do we start the serious negotiations between the Republicans and the Democrats on a revenue package that actually might pass? That has not happened in several years, and Joni's right. It has to happen. There has to be a serious discussion about where you find the revenue for McCleary.
And so the governor has mentioned capital gains and carbon tax, and everybody's saying like, oh, well, didn't the voters just reject the carbon tax? But that carbon tax had a big X across it the whole time. Everyone knew that the environmentalists didn't like that carbon tax. So I personally think the capital gains tax has a better chance, but as you're saying, the Senate is so not into it. They're going to have to find something. The revenue forecast will increase, but it won't be enough.
It's a real chicken and egg situation, because we're never going to have a Democratic Senate until mental health improves around this state. We're not going to improve mental health in this state until we have a Democratic
Senate.
That was your best line.
Here's an outline. Here's an outline of what I think maybe could pass. First of all, you have to do some form of the levy swap, which both Republicans and Democrats have supported, where you move property tax revenue, not just lower the levies, but move the levy dollars from the local school districts into the state. You dedicate more of the existing revenue to education. And then at that point, you'll need less than what the governor's proposing. And maybe you could get some Republican willingness to close some of these tax loopholes that exist in terms of the sales tax. A package like that might pass. But just raising the carbon tax, which Republicans are staunchly opposed to, and this form of an income tax, which is what capital gains tax is not going to get 25 votes in the Senate. It just won't.
Okay. We'll have lots more to say about that as the legislative session actually happens. Another topic this week, the problem, you know, you've been to the Paradise Visitor Center at Mount Rainier. It's beautiful. The problem is there's not enough Facebook. So this week we found out Verizon and T-Mobile want to build transmitters on Rainier so you have cell service. Anyone have a problem with that?
Nope.
I don't. The safety argument in the article that I read about it sort of swung me over. They could make it attractive. They don't have to make it hideous.
Yeah, there was a Paradise visitor who told Cairo TV that it's nice to let people know where you are and that you made it safe. But is the Paradise Visitor Center really that dangerous? Like, are we dramatizing our outdoor adventures here? You're pulling into a parking lot.
And then you pull into the parking lot and then you go hiking.
Yeah,
and you might get lost and you might get in trouble.
Yeah.
If it's a safety argument, I'm okay with it. But if it's corporations wanting to make a profit off our national parks, I'm less excited about it.
Well, we need the Bundys to come up here and rescue the Paradise Visitor Center.
Bring the ranchers.
No, I think the thing that they should, people have said, oh, people are going to be talking on their phones. I don't think that's going to be a problem. People were like saying, oh, well, people be making Facebook posts and Instagram posts. Who cares?
That's
what's annoying, and I've encountered out hiking in the parks, in our state parks, are drones. That there are people hiking up there and bringing their goddamn drones so they can take pictures from the sky.
That sounds lovely.
Themselves.
That sounds breathtaking.
And that is really
sounds like paradise.
And
is what it sounds like, right?
That's really interesting. Annoying. They're very loud and they're very they're just obnoxious and unnecessary. So if you want to keep something out of the parks that's tech related, don't make it cell phones and cell towers that are disguised. Make it drones.
But the other thing is, you know, this bit about, I don't want people talking on cell phones in my natural environment. I do believe that cell phone use, not just like your text and your Facebook and all of that, is coming to airplanes. Which
that's the real threat.
If you want to hear something awful, it's the guy in the seat behind you doing whatever on the phone. Don't need to hear that. Don't need to hear that.
No.
What about if, okay, but are none of you troubled by the idea of the Facebook people's, I hear this from people all the time. You know, you go up out on a trail and people's faces are in their phones and you need to keep that temptation out. Is nothing sacred? That doesn't bother anyone.
Well, that's like the people I'm on my phone all the time, and there's people who don't like that no matter where you are. There's these anti-technology people. I mean, that doesn't bother me as much as just the towers might not be very attractive. But
I will say hiking with these is not probably a good spot for distracted walking.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just have to answer this one message. Oh,
when I peeled
Cliff,
the bear.
Cliff.
So when you're camping or when you're on Rainier or what have you, are you on your phone? Or do you put it away?
No, I'm not on my phone. I have it if I need it for an emergency, but no, I'm not walking along the trail staring at some technological thing. That seems ridiculous.
I'm usually on my
husband.
Stay home
if you want to do that.
It depends. You know, I mean, I'm on my phone a lot, and the way I've always looked at it, it has allowed me over the years to be with my kids and be with my family while still keeping in touch with my work and my job. And for that way, I think it's liberating.
Isn't that less attention for your family?
Yeah, but
maybe they don't deserve it. I don't know your family.
Or it's that, or they get no attention because, you know, it gets you out of your office.
Maybe you should revisit the sentence, I'm always on my phone.
I am always on my phone.
Is this painful for you being on the Weekend Review where for an hour straight?
I want to grab my phone.
Phone.
It's in my pocket right now. I mean,
are we not interesting enough for you?
One of the things in my business, I tell my clients, you can reach me all the time.
And well, tell them there's certain times they can't reach you.
No.
It'll improve everything.
You know, Joni, they don't like that, and they're paying me. So it helps, I think.
But you're not conflicted about being indebted to your paymasters instead of enjoying the view.
It allows me to be out and not in an office at every moment because I can do almost everything on my smartphone that I can do if I'm sitting in my office.
I have to say that I went for a long weekend away and accidentally jumped in a pool with my phone in my pocket. It was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Absolutely.
I read three books. I didn't read a paragraph and then look at Twitter and read a paragraph and look at Twitter.
Yeah.
And it was, so now it's my practice to always jump in the pool with my phone in my pocket. But
I will
the
say
expense.
That Nancy Pearl told me that Twitter has actually changed her reading patterns. Just exactly what you just described.
How's that?
Well, that she's reading a book and she's trying to get deep into the book. And then the phone kind of lights up for a second. Yeah. Maybe it's too close to her. So absolutely.
Nancy, et tu, Nancy Pearl?
She's going to kill me for this.
Wow. But you're not bothered because Twitter's so fun.
No, I don't. When I read a book, I try to get the old Twitter on.
Twitter
a little
is
further
not
away.
Fun.
No, and it's not worth giving up the book for.
I don't understand. Like, Twitter, my Twitter addiction is ridiculous. Like, it's the last thing I look at night and the first thing I look at in the morning, and I look at it all day. And most of what I see upsets me or I'm being personally attacked, and yet I line up for this abuse and punishment all day long.
That's what I'm trying to understand.
It's, I wish I had the courage of like Louis C.K. and other people who have just said, Twitter doesn't make me happier, I quit.
Mm. You know, I think it depends on what you do. For me, at least. My business and my livelihood and my profession, working in politics, it requires this. It requires being plugged. A long time ago, and everybody's going to start yelling, when I was the chairman of the state party and smartphones were a new—
Which party was that?
The Republican Party.
Are you still a Republican?
Karl Rove required everybody to get the first generation of smartphones because he saw immediately that it plugged us all in every moment to what was happening in the news and to each other. And it to me, it isn't frivolous. It's I have to know what's going on and what's being said.
How's that feel, that you have to know?
It's not making you happy.
I think if you do other things, if you do other things for a living, it's not as necessary. But doing what I do, I have to.
I'm just saying you deserve better, Chris, because I love you.
Can I just ask if Twitter and having to be on your phone is helping the president-elect at this moment or any moment?
That's horrifying, the lack of discipline he shows.
Well, look what it did to Boeing stock. Look what it did to Lockheed Martin stock when he retaliated against them on Twitter.
One more word on Facebook that I've been hearing more and more people say that they are deleting the Facebook app from their phone. Because if you really need it that much, it's on. You've got it on something else. But do you need it on your phone? There's an idea for you. Or you can just jump into Dan Savage's swimming pool. That's, are we invited?
Yes, you are all invited to that hotel where I jumped into that swimming pool.
Okay. finally, is anyone else? I'm concerned about the animal rebellion. This week, 200 Seattle City Light customers lost electricity for 2 hours because a bird dropped a fish onto a power line. At least that's what Seattle City Light says. I have already flagged this as fake news on Facebook because it's obviously preposterous. But a crew investigating the outage claims they walked the power lines and found what workers described as an electrocuted salmon. which would cost you $30 at Canlis.
Sounds like a euphemism.
Yeah, that's actually a new way of cooking the salmon. You didn't know that?
Yeah, electrocuted salmon sounds like a euphemism for something we would talk about in Savage Love.
The mind reels. You want to put a little olive oil on the power line before you do that. And it's not just blackout salmon. There was a fire this week at Woodland Park Zoo that caused the evacuation of tortoises, lizards, and snakes. It feels like animals are rising up and trying to make Earth great again.
And about time.
By wiping us out.
Signs of the apocalypse are there for just those who want to see them.
I have a question about that. So where did they take all these animals? Where do they go? Do they have a hotel with a swimming pool?
Well, they needed a heated pool because the reptiles and the amphibians can't make their own heat, right? They're cold-blooded, so I guess the power went out there too, and so they
rushed them to the Republican-dominated Washington State Senate with the other cold-blooded reptiles.
I'm just sitting here.
Yeah. Are you still a Republican?
Absolutely.
All right, KOW's Week in Review.
We tried, but it didn't work.
Tried.
Intervention. We're not even on the air. This is just an intervention for you, Chris.
We are, and we're almost done with the hour where we're reviewing the week. And is there anything that you wish we'd have talked about or the week in preview that's coming up that you want to let us know before we go?
The world gets pretty quiet this time of year, but there's a lot that's going to be happening soon. Just to preview way months ahead of time, we hit the debt limit on March 31st, and sometime between now and then we're going to hit $20 trillion in debt. And that is really when it gets real. How is Donald Trump going to deal with that? That might be the one thing that Republicans will rise up and say, no, we're not going to add $5 trillion more to the debt.
I don't really think it's that quiet right now. I would disagree with you, Chris, on that, because we have the whole Russian hacking thing going on, and it's going to all the way up to Christmas and during Christmas,
all right,
after Christmas.
Debt, Russian hacking. I would rather talk about lizards, but got anything better? Cold-blooded, non-venomous snakes.
There's so much great TV in the world right now, and that's a real tonic. And people should engage in self-care and consume art and media.
And football.
Music and maybe football, just to watch Richard Sherman. we need that, too. We need to not just focus obsessively on everything that's on fire. Every once in a while, we need to sit down and watch Search Party, for example, on TBS, which is a terrific show.
Dan Savage of The Stranger, Joni Balter, Civic Cocktail, Chris Vance. Good to talk to all of you on The Week in Review. Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.